Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and I am thrilled to bring you a wonderful show today with my wonderful guests that I have for you. Wise, wise souls. The first woman we are having on is Dr. Jennifer Howard. And Dr. Jennifer Howard believes that everyone has the innate potential to access the wisdom, happiness, fulfillment, and peace we desire. Dr. Howard is an internationally known psychotherapist, life and business coach, professional speaker, and radio host, and she also is the Huffington Post blogger. She wrote the book, The Ultimate Life Path. She wrote the book, The Ultimate Life Plan, and we're going to be discussing that today and how to deeply transform your everyday experience and create changes that last. Dr. Jennifer, as she's known in social media, was named one of the top 25 celebrity doctors on Twitter, as well as being dubbed the funniest shrink on Twitter. You can contact Dr. Jennifer at drjenniferhoward.com. And without further ado, we are going to have Jennifer Howard, the author of Your Ultimate Life Plan, How to Deeply Transform Your Everyday Experience and Create Changes at Last. Jennifer, thank you so much for being on Unlimited Realities today. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. I'm so excited to be here and to talk to your folks. This is a great day.
Oh, this is wonderful. Your book is superb. It's what a wonderful guide. It's one of those books that I really, truly appreciate because not only do you have such wonderful wisdom and insight, but you also provide incredible tools to increase awareness and to embrace life in such a happy, fulfilling way. And it's not out in the clouds, airy, fairy, light and fluffy. It's real. It's grounded. It's everyday living, and it's how to look at it through a different perspective. Absolutely fabulous. I highly recommend it.
So, oh my goodness, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm so excited to just dive right in.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about how to make our life better. And so how do we derive happiness, and how can we evolve from our wounded ego, our issues, into more of our sacred self?
Wow. Read the book. No, I'm kidding. Short answer. That was the
Amen.
Short answer. Yeah. So, no, I just had to say that it was silly. This book is a culmination of my almost 30 years of being a psychotherapist and a life coach, and I saw so many people reading these books that are inspirational and fabulous, but they don't tell anybody how to do anything. And
right.
People would be in my practice, they'd be like, I read that book, it's the number one bestseller on New York Times, we all know what it is, and it's so exciting, about 3 weeks into it, they're like, I have no idea. So...
Right.
You know,
yes.
And then they get so down, like it's impossible, I can't really do it. So this book, for better or for worse, keeps people's toes to the fire. I really,
right.
as a life coach and a therapist, I don't let you get away, meaning hide from yourself, you know.
Yes.
So this book kind of hopefully is my version of being there with you, saying, look over here, look there, what's this mean, you know.
Yes. Yes. And you know what I really loved is that you spoke to the human, not the airy fairy out there, that the unattainable aspects that people look at and then they feel so deflated because they may reach a high, and yet to attain it, to contain it, to maintain it is virtually impossible if they're not mindful with it. So there's this overwhelming kind of defeated feeling. And what I loved about it is that you looked at ego differently. You perceive ego differently than what a lot of these spiritual books look at it as, because it is a necessary grounding to use as a tool. And I love.
Go ahead. Thank you so much. No, thank you. You're thank you so much for that, because having been a therapist as well as a healer, I mean, I've studied and I taught at a healing school and I taught, spirituality. So certainly I got my feet in both worlds. But
right.
The ego, to say, you know, don't have an ego is like saying get a lobotomy or get Alzheimer's. I mean, we want that ego. We want that part of us that says, I want this. It's the humanity in us. It's that human,
right.
You know, it's the part of, spiritually speaking, it's we're that wave in the vast ocean, but we're that wave. So to forget the wave feels like we forget our lives. So there's a way to work with that ego so the wounded ego is not screaming at us all the time. That when that can relax a little, then that sacred part of us rises and we're living in a more sacred, from our deepest self, from our sacred self, from our higher self, our there's a million
right.
words to use for it.
Right, and there's this point where, you know, I love how you take the person from where they're at and work with what they have to work with, because there's going to be highs and lows, and there's going to be times where there's, you know, growth and evolution. And there's this piece that I find in a lot of writings and books, and wonderful books at that, but they don't look at that one piece of judgment as also a discerning piece and tool that can be used as kind of a barometer on some aspect. So you can, you know, you look at discernment in a really beautiful light too, and you really delve deeply into looking at discernment and let's putting judgment in its right box and putting discernment as a tool we all need, and we're kind of pushing out the window.
Right. I mean, our discernment is our ability to choose. And since we're in duality, we live in unity and duality, the duality says we must choose. So that discernment is, how do we choose? And this chapter is about listening to our inner voice inside and knowing whether it's the inner voice of Aunt Matilda or, you know, some programming from our childhood, or is it our wisest inner voice? I mean, obviously, if our inner voice is telling us to eat more ice cream, it's probably not our wisest voice. But, you know, that's a fairly easy one for both of us to get, you know, everybody to get. But you know, what is our deeper wisdom? What is our inner guidance telling us? Is this guidance or is this poppycock? And unless
right.
we dive into it to kind of loosen it up, to discover it, we're not able to make a choice, or we're just kind of going with the wind, you know, in our world. And then we get to a certain age and go, what is my life about and what am I doing?
Right. And you explain this really well in regard to kind of the process of what we all go through when we're developing our consciousness. And you describe this in your four dimensions of consciousness, and you delve into the action, the physical dimension, the formation, the emotional dimension, the creation, which is the mental dimension, and then the emanation, which is our spiritual dimension. Can we talk a little bit about those four dimensions of consciousness?
Absolutely. I think I do it differently than a lot of people. Rather than just body, mind, spirit, these are also
mm-hmm.
mindsets. And consciousness, as I see it, when we break it down, is nested, meaning that the smallest mindset is contained in the next level and next level, like Russian dolls. And the largest is the spiritual or the oneness or whatever anybody wants, God, whatever anybody wants to call it. So starting with the beginning, the action physical is not just our physicality, although that includes that. It's the physical mindset when you don't know there's anything but physical reality, when you don't know your thoughts and feelings. I mean, everybody knows they have thoughts and feelings, but do they know what they are? Do they know, are they in touch with them, or are they just run by this small mindset? It's a very fearful mindset, and frankly, a lot of the world is run by it. It's that fundamental thinking, black and white thinking, all or nothing thinking, I'm right and you're wrong thinking, which causes wars and fights and divorces and all sorts
mm-hmm.
of stuff.
Right.
And then when we step out of that, I mean, you could relate to that when you read it, right? People you knew like that, or yourself when you were
Surfer.
Younger.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and clients like that, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You see people walking around with all kinds of levels of awareness and consciousness, and how they interact is pretty obvious.
Well, and you know, we all have arrested development. We're not, you know, 100%. It's not linear. We don't grow out of the action pistol 100% into the next thing. There's slivers, what I call slivers of consciousness, that cut through all of them. So we may be quite mature spiritually and psychologically in many areas, but we still have those places inside of us. That's part of our human journey, is to continue to go back to those and go, uh-oh, what's this about? Why am I doing this?
And here it comes again.
and here it comes again for more refinement, for deeper insight. So then we move, and I talk about that in the first chapter, that we do repeat our same issues, most of us, because we kind of incarnated with those six issues or whatever, and we kind of repeat them. Now, if they're just not moving, there's some hidden payoffs, which I talk about in chapter one. But continuing with the dimensions, after action physical, we move into the formation emotional, and that is where we finally understand that all of this has some meaning, and that we have an emotional life, and we can connect to people emotionally. I mean, the first dimension is very tribal. You know, we would need to look like these people, grow up with these people. Then we move into this bigger tribe of mankind, where we can be alike because we think alike, or, you know, a bigger perspective. And that's where we finally deal with some of those ego structures and things that, you know, have run our lives, where we start to see, oh, my goodness, this is that, and that's, you know, putting things together. Life starts to make some sense.
Right.
And then we move into the creation mental, and that's where at the beginning of it we're looking at belief systems and our thought processes and the patterns of thinking, and at the, you know, keeping in mind I'm speaking linearly right now, holographic consciousness is always available, but from the linear perspective, toward the end of creation mental, when we're moving into emanation spiritual, we're really on that something-nothing border where we're moving into nothingness, and we create fresh and new. That's what you were talking about when it's the creation.
Okay. And then the emanation, which would be the spiritual dimension.
Yes. Is the largest context of all. I mean, that's where, you know, basically be still and know I am God. It's the stillness. It's the inner silence. It's basically silence. And it's the experience of God. I mean, I think that's what all the mystics have in common versus a religious path, even though they're all beautiful too. But when you get to the mystical end of the spectrum of all religions, Rumi, St. John of the Cross, all of those, if you read them, they say the same thing, because it's the experience, and it's similar, you know.
So and it's a really, feeling.
Right. Well, it's not an emotional feeling, but it's an experience.
Right.
And eventually, what you're getting at is right. It emanates all the way down into the physical, where we can embody spirit, right? Where we're embodying everything.
Right. And in regard to people's spiritual paths and practicing spiritual practices, there's also, you talk about, and I've heard this concept before, but I loved how you explain this, and I would love you to get into this. How can we look at what spiritual bypass is and the aspect of kind of shoving issues under the rug and not dealing with them? What is like a spiritual bypass when it comes to our practices?
Oh, that's such a great question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I see it so much, and it makes me sad, because you really cannot achieve the depth of connection with the experience of oneness with God if you are continually shoving your issues under the table. So a spiritual bypass is not wanting to face something. Just, you know, and there's many books that will tell you don't face it. And that's what's confusing. You know, they'll say, don't think about that. Well, okay, don't think about a pink elephant. Go ahead, try.
Right.
Of course, your mind goes to a pink elephant. So, you know, if it's in front of us, if I'm mad at my whatever, or I'm upset with this, or this hurt, or I feel shame, there it is.
Right.
So eventually, if we deal with it enough and we face it again, it's just a simple blip on the screen, and we're back to that larger context and the wholeness. But until it is a blip on the screen, my book gives you 100 ways to Sunday to, you know, to look at it, to be with it, to tear it apart. Because the more we loosen those knots of consciousness that kind of become those hard and reactions, they continue to happen.
Right. Right. And it's that mm-hmm. whole denial piece brings it back up too, because within spiritual practices, there's even context that supports avoiding things that bother you or things you don't want to look at.
Give me an example of what you're thinking.
There's rhetoric in regard to, act as if and push that out of your head and, focus more upon the positive aspects and the negative will go away. Well, the negative doesn't necessarily go away. It just kind of pops in and pops out. And until it's dealt with, it's still just as raw, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Lisa, thank you so much. Yes, over and over, I just see this, and it makes me so sad. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and I see these tweets and these Facebook postings, and they're all basically denial.
Right.
And they're teaching this, and of course it's much more popular than what I'm saying, because who wants to deal with this crap? I mean, really, let's go have a cup of tea and forget it. But if it's reappearing, it isn't that you have to take. Now people say, well, I take every little thing. Look, you'll know what to take. If it keeps tugging at you, if it keeps nipping at your heels, if it keeps reappearing, there it is to be with. If it's just a little tiny thing, oh, they hurt my feelings, I've forgotten what they even said to me, don't worry about it. You moved past it. It's fine. You don't have to go looking for stuff. It's going to be there. But I so appreciate what you're saying, because there's so much kind of new age. I don't want to pick on the new age, but, I don't know what to call it, new spirituality.
Right, and I hear you. I feel the same way. It's a category, and I don't want to bash it, but I also want to bring some reality to it, because some of it just doesn't feel grounded enough for me.
Well, it's not going to help. The bottom line is it doesn't help. It'll help temporarily, and that's what I talk about, the quick fix. I mean, there's all those energy psychologists that are wonderful in their place, the tappings and the releasings and the. But if you have to release every 5 seconds because something's coming up, deal with the something coming up so you can not have to keep releasing on it.
Right. And what would you suggest in regard to dealing with an aspect? What's the most common way that people move through their stuff in regard to address? Say an issue came up, and it's like, okay, I've got to deal with this. I have to deal with my possessiveness. I have to deal with my control issues. I have to, and then. Where do they go? Do they go to a therapist? Do they start with themselves? Do they start to explore why this keeps popping up? What would you suggest would be the first step for them?
Well, I wanted to just say yes, because the three things you said were excellent. Yes. That's what you do. My book is Practices in Here. The chapter 11 is the multidimensional awareness practice. So you take that issue through there, and it's going to give you some insight. You might need help. You might need to go to your therapist or your coach or somebody who's really well-trained. And I know coaching traditionally doesn't look backward. You might need to look at, I know the easiest way to loosen this up often is to go back to your earliest memory of when this happened. Mm-hmm. I don't mean the time it happened, but a time it happened. I mean, unless you had a shock trauma that you were raped or something like that, you may have just had a mom who couldn't pay attention to you on a daily basis, and that caused this thing. So it's not like one memory is going to release everything and it's all done. No, it's noticing, mom couldn't pay attention. She was busy, and I felt like I wasn't important. So I'm always looking for people to make me important. Okay, now I understand that. How do I make myself important? I don't mean from that wounded place. I mean we're all important, not because we're so darn special, but because we are.
Right.
We're all special because we are.
Right. And you really offer a lot of compassion and forgiveness throughout the book, where, what I loved about it was that it was so soul-oriented without being preachy, because it came from a place of, having a tremendous amount of compassion for the human condition and knowing that we all have stuff and there's always going to be something to move through and improve upon, but you did it in such a gentle way of not only explaining it, but I loved the tools, because it was tools that you didn't have to go out and invest in. It was something that you could access and utilize within your own being or right within your own awareness. And, that to me, this is that. That's why that this makes this book so great, because you can take this book and it's like going to a therapist. If you mm-hmm. use it as, you know, it's designed, you can actually have a breakthrough with yourself at the end of the reading of the book. How you have many personal development and spiritual books have a different view. Now, you were talking a little bit about how you view the ego and how important that is, but how can we look at a healthy ego versus an unhealthy or toxic ego that might get in our way in regard to our own personal growth?
Well, when you're saying toxic ego, I would say wounded ego, meaning it's still so wounded in certain areas that it's constantly, you know, you're needing, it needs your attention. Those
See, there's that compassion of you. There's your compassion again. Go ahead.
Oh, good, good. Well, I just, you know, me too. You know, me too. Let me line up
right.
with all the humankind here to say me too. So we all, you know, that's really that wound. So if you see someone, that's why ego is so weird. You know, it's a weird word. And people think egoic is egotistical. And really, if you're quote-unquote egotistical, you're just wounded in a certain way that's needing you need to pay attention to, so you need to pay attention to, so everybody else doesn't have to pay attention to you.
Right.
You know, that cry for attention all the time.
Right, right. And that also comes from a place of really knowing your value and your worth. Now, you talk about a lot of the multidimensional awareness practice. Can we talk a little bit more about how we kind of move through that and how we look at ourselves as a spiritual warrior? Because there's that evolution of going through that awareness, and in your book you really kind of give credit to having gone through that and becoming that spiritual warrior. Let's talk about your definition of what a spiritual warrior is.
Well, it's being with and for yourself every moment. It's the bravery that it takes to face life as it shows up. I mean, I was talking to somebody recently, and they said, well, once you're in alignment with God, there's always green lights in your life. No, there's not. People die. We all get sick. We're all going to die. Everybody on this call, everybody you've ever known is going to die. Now, will they move on to something else? Yes, we can all debate that, or I think that's probably true, but that still doesn't mean you're not going to miss them.
Right.
I lost
so it's having bravery to move through life.
Thank you. Warrior. Thank you. I had a senior moment there. There we go. I have to forgive myself.
Okay.
But the spiritual warrior, thank you. Thank you for putting me back on track. The spiritual warrior, we say, okay, I just had a moment. I forgot what I was saying. My friend Lisa told me where I was going or what kind of was the world I was in, and now I move on. And I forgive myself, and I say, here I am, human being, and I had a moment where I wasn't so brilliant. Okay, there you go.
you're always
warrior.
Brilliant. You're always brilliant.
Gosh, you're
now, now, where can our listeners find you? More about your book, your speaking, your workshop schedule. Where can they connect with you?
Well, the book has its very own website that it keeps up for itself. No, I'm kidding. Called YourUltimateLifePlan.com, and you can go there and read the first two chapters for free. There's links there to buy it wherever, you know, it feels good to you. Then there's DrJenniferHoward.com. That's the main website with the blog and lots of – there's a meditation room there. You can go and meditate. There's pictures and ways to think about that. There's downloads from the book on that UltimateLifePlan.com. You can follow me at Dr. Jennifer on Twitter, Dr. Jennifer fan page on Facebook. And I love hearing from people about the book, their questions, their comments. It always helps me be better. And we're creating, Lisa, a workbook that takes people even more deeply, because the editor, I begged for 20,000 more words and got them. But at the end, I was cutting. So we would say, oh, that "the" doesn't need to be there. Gone. trying to keep it to 90,000 words. So we're creating a workbook where I don't have to shut up.
That is beautiful, beautiful.
So, I, you know, please get in touch, and and let me know what you're thinking and how I can serve, because that's what I want to do, and as I know you do. We want
Wonderful.
To serve, don't we?
Wonderful. And I think a workshop is a great complement to this book, because it's one of those things where this is going to be one of those books where anyone who is on a path of evolution and awareness really needs to get, and I will tell you now, your ultimate life plan, how to deeply transform your everyday experience and create changes that last. Dr. Jennifer Howard. This is a wonderful, wonderful book. And Dr. Jennifer Howard, thank you for being my guest today. You are just such a light. What a vibrant energy you are.
Oh, so are you. I had such a good time. Thank you for having
me. I did too. My pleasure. I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, I'd love to come back anytime.
Wonderful. Thank you again. Have a beautiful holiday and a beautiful week, and I look forward to talking to you again.
You too,
Thank
Lisa.
You,
Take care. Okay,
you
bye.
Too. Bye-bye. Hi there, and now we are moving into our second segment. Bear with me. I'm moving through my new format here with learning to move into our segues and our segments with grace. And sometimes I work it pretty well, and other times I really don't. So thank you for your patience and your tolerance here with me as I move through. But now we're moving into our next segment with my next guest. And my next guest is author Greg Frucci, who wrote The Path of 300. And this is an incredibly, wonderfully written book. I was really, really blessed to read this. I honestly don't know how we crossed paths, but I'm really glad we did, because Greg is a pretty interesting guy. He took his sailboat and planned to travel across the ocean and ended up in Bermuda and coming back. And it was a soul discovery story. So we're going to talk about Greg's trip, his travel, what he discovered, where he went in his soul and his heart, and how he looked at relationships and changes in relationships that may have evolved from this as well. So without further ado, let me introduce to you my next guest, author Greg Frucci, who wrote The Path of 300. Greg, thank you so much for being my guest. How are you doing?
Lisa, I'm doing fantastic, and thank you for having me on your show today, and especially with Dr. Howard. I was listening to some of what she was saying, and it's amazing how what she was talking about was being in the now, flowing in
right.
the moment of time, and that is exactly what happened to me when I was sailing across the Atlantic Ocean.
Right. That's why I put you two together. I have a theme here today, and the theme is really looking at life and making it a beautiful experience, even when we're struggling, we're scared, we're fearful, we're feeling like, dear God, what the hell am I doing? Even in those moments, we find the divinity. And so I thought it was a great pairing, because you're both really interesting, cool people, and both of you wrote a fantastic book. So, you know, let's talk about first, you know, you started out as an architect, so where did this all come from to want to be a sailor? Where did the search for the search for the sea and spirit and all of that come from, the analytical left brain of an architect?
Well, you know, it's funny. My resume is ridiculous in a good way. I practiced architecture for 20 years after graduating from Carnegie Mellon University and getting my license and putting on a suit and going to work for 20 years doing that. And in that process, I consider myself a waterman. I surf. I've sailed a little bit throughout my life. My father was a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps, an old school Marine. And he taught me many, many things. And his mantra was always improvise, adapt, and overcome. And he instilled in me a way of looking at life that it really didn't make sense to me until I was at sea we get sidetracked by things, or things come up and we think we want to change, or we regret things in the past, which is what Dr. Howard was talking about today. And my life was a mess for a long time because I really wasn't in contact with self and what self wanted out of life.
Was it a mess? Was it that it was a mess in regard to unhappiness, sadness, loneliness? Was there, you know, an escapism going on? How did you feel like your life was a mess?
In the words of Dr. Howard, yes to all.
Gotcha. Okay.
I just reached a point with I was married and divorced twice. In another relationship with a female that was just crazy for about 2.5 years. And then that ended, and I was 50 years old. And males, females, we can all relate to this one thing, this one phrase. I'm done. I just want to take off. I need to figure things out. And all of that happens because I think that so many things are swirling around in our head, both left brain analytically, and I'm actually an artist. I'm very right brained, and architecture is a confluence of both left brain and right brain. And two very strong schools of thought within architecture. One is very analytical, and it must be this way. Something
uh-huh.
must happen a certain way, and if you don't do it that certain way, you're wrong. It will fail. Whereas I went to an architecture school, which was, when I went there, it was the exact opposite. Just be creative, Greg. Create whatever you want. It doesn't matter if it would fall down in the future because you're just playing right now. Just school yourself into becoming an artist, and then the rest of it will figure itself out. Well, that process got me to a point once I started practicing architecture was art was too expensive, art was wrong, you know, it must be this way. And so I was confused, or at least I allowed myself to be confused. Thus,
okay.
another lesson of, you know, whatever we do because we choose to do it. Nothing is done to us. Nothing happens from the outside. Yes, things, we see things, religion, relationships, career, whatever it is, we can sometimes, and I was guilty of this, of blaming others or blaming the outside world for choices that I make. But it's my brain. And what Dr. Howell was saying too is correct, I think, and that is if we remain in the moment and we accept what's happening from the outside, and we own it.
Right.
And we can flow in the moment.
We don't sweep it under the rug.
We don't sweep it under the rug. And the illustration of that, I think I was guided to do what I did by the universe. That's me owning what I did. And what I did was not to become a sailor. I could have jumped on a motorcycle and driven cross country, or I could have put on a backpack and gone hiking in the mountains or whatever. But it just so happens that I had a sailboat I reached that. Go ahead.
And in regard to you taking the sailing, you could have gotten on a motorcycle, but you would have been landlocked. You know, you would have had something
right.
under your feet. You could have backpacked. Again, you would have been on firm ground. You took a boat in the water where you couldn't see land by yourself and had never
yep.
done it before. Okay?
Yes.
That's a little bit different than having your feet on the earth, I think.
It is. and for the universe to say, okay, Fruchi, you need to learn something right now. You need to learn something major. You need to get rid of all of the anger, the frustration, the regrets that you have in your life. and you need to be yourself and learn something. Well, I didn't know that at the time. I just happened to have a boat. And so
What did you learn? What was the biggest lesson you learned?
The biggest lesson I learned was it was day three. I was 300 miles off the coast of North Carolina, almost halfway to Bermuda. It's almost 750 nautical miles out to sea, a little tiny island.
Okay.
And on that third day, and I didn't know it because not only was I out there alone, not only was I doing this for the first time, but I didn't have access to weather information instantaneously. All I had was a satellite phone. And I got a message the night before saying, okay, Pucci, you're going to run into 20 to 30 knot wind, 6 to 8 foot seas, no big deal. And I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be fun. And I was having a lot of fun up to that point. Oh, it was a little scary at night when I went to sleep, and I didn't know if I was going to get hit by a ship because I was crossing shipping lanes and almost got hit one time. But that third day, it went from 20 to 30 knot winds and 6 to 8 foot seas to 30 to 40 knot winds with 50 knot gusts and 22 foot seas that I was heading into. I was scared to death.
I can imagine.
I didn't know if I was going to live. I didn't know I was going to die. And at those moments when there is no place to pull over, you can't pull underneath an overpass because the rain is there, or I have a flat tire on my motorcycle and I can just go chill out somewhere in a hotel or go camping. It's just you and the sea. It's just you and nature. And so you have two choices. And here's the biggest lesson. The choices are sit down and cry like a little baby and pray that somebody comes and saves you and changes you from the outside. Or, in the words of my father, you improvise, adapt, and overcome to that situation that you're in, no matter what it is. And so it applies to everything. And so
survivalism.
Your survivalism. And yes, you're scared. Yes, there is huge amounts of fear about what's happening to you. But you own it. You own it, and you feel exactly what's happening. You don't brush it under anything. You deal with it, and you face it, and you just keep going. And that day was an 18-hour event. Coast Guard came to see me. I basically sail into the center of a very nasty tropical system. The rain stopped, and I heard over the radio, "Sailing vessel Cuddy, sailing vessel Cuddy, this is Coast Guard C206, do you read me?" And I was, what? I picked up my radio, I turned it on, and I said, "This is sailing vessel Cuddy, I read you loud and clear." And about that moment, I looked, and about 200 feet off the water is this Coast Guard C-130 aircraft heading straight towards me. It was like an angel from God.
I bet.
And I wanted to say, get me the hell out of here right now. But I didn't. I said, "I've got engine power, I'm okay, and I'm thinking about turning around and running with this storm for a while." And he said, "Sir, that is a very wise decision, because on the other side of the eye wall, it's even worse." And so I climbed to the top of the next wave, I turned my boat around, and I started surfing, and I surfed waves that were 20 feet for the next 15 hours.
Wow.
But at the end of it, and here's the lesson, at the end of it, the storm passed me by, the seas calmed down, I turned my boat back around, and I started heading towards Bermuda, and the next day, the sky was blue, the seas were calm, I climbed out on deck, and I went to sleep, and I dreamed. And there's the lesson.
Right.
No matter
you got
what happens
through it.
To us in the moment, there is a way to get through whatever you're getting through. You just have to improvise to the situation and adapt to it, bust through the wall that's blocking you, and overcome whatever is bugging you at the time. And the universe at that point was putting me in that situation so I would learn that. And I came back changed.
Right.
Things that used to just bug the crap out of me, like, I'm driving down the road and I don't know if I'm going to have enough gas to get to the next gas station. And you would freak out and worry, and now it's just like, oh, well, I don't care if I run out of gas or run out of gas. I'll figure it out.
Right. No, you saw you saw the hand of God and you realize, you know, these are the things that are important and the others are not. I mean, you really simplified faith, I would say.
Yes.
And in your book, you wrote it as a fictional, in like a fictional genre. However, it's a completely true story. And you actually played the character of Peta. Is that how you say it? Peta or Peta?
You know, and that's the thing about art, Lisa. You look at something on the wall, and it says something to you, and that's fine. I pronounce it Peta.
Okay.
But, and people say Peta, people say Peta, Peta, whatever. And I pronounce it Peta just because that's me. But it's okay. You know, that's the cool thing about art to me is you read it and you felt something. You saw the images and that name spoke to you in a certain way. And that's good.
It really did, and it had a real resonance of energy. The aspect of your relationship that you have with your dog in the book also is really an interesting one, because I'm a dog lover myself, but I'm also a cat lover, and my cat was named Lucky and passed recently, and my dog has that quality that you write about where they just kind of look at you and you just know that they're just, you know, talking to you intuitively. But you also wrote about this incredible omen, and I'd like to look at it as a happening, happy omen, where the second day out, I believe, this bird would circle your mast, and every day would circle your mast. And you found out, once you landed in Bermuda, what that was all about. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Trying not to tear up. That bird, when I was at sea, I saw many different species of birds, four or five different ones, and they would just fly around and do their thing and, you know, not really pay much attention to me. But on that second day, as you say, this bird with maybe a 5-foot wingspan, beautiful white with a few little black markings and this long tail, long two tail feathers came off of it, almost the same length as the body of the bird. And I saw it, and it wasn't not paying attention to me. It flew directly to my mast. And as the boat is moving slowly back and forth with the waves, the top of the mast is moving back and forth, and this bird is hovering at my mast as if it wanted to land. And then it came down and hovered and stared at me. And I'm thinking, well, this is interesting. Maybe he's hungry. And so I found some bread and I tossed it at the bird, and it just went right past the bird, and he didn't do anything. It just fell in the water, and another bird flew down, a different species of bird flew down, picked it up and flew off. And he just stared at it for about 15 minutes. And then he flew around the boat and then took off towards the horizon. And this is the morning, like you say, the morning of the second day. And I look to the horizon and I see a ship. And I break out what's called coal regs, which is a way you determine the direction of the boat and what kind of boat it is. And it turned out to be a tanker because I was crossing the shipping lanes. And I broke out my binoculars, determined its speed and direction. And with my speed and direction, we would have collided if I wasn't paying attention. And this was, he was about 3 to 4 miles away. And the bird was flying directly to it. And then I just started thinking about the boat and went around the boat, and everything was fine. The next day, the morning of the third day before the event with the storm, another one came, did the same thing, came to my mast, flew around the boat, and took off. And every day, all the way to Bermuda, saw these birds. And so, like you say, I get to Bermuda, and I find out that the bird is the national bird of Bermuda, called the Bermuda longtail. It's a white-tailed tropical bird. And I had this experience with a cab driver. Part of the story, too, is I got to Bermuda, the boat was damaged, had to leave it there for about 5 months to get repaired until after hurricane season. Then I flew back to Bermuda and sailed her back. But so on this cab ride to the airport with this gentleman, old guy, ex-accountant, you know, he was just driving cabs because he just liked to talk to people, according to him. And he asked me to tell him a story, so I told him the story that I just told you, and it's in the book, and he just looked at me and smiled. And he said, do you know what a long tail is? And I said, well, it's a bird. And he was just like, well, according to old comedians, the long tail carries the spirit of those who pass on. And he said, is your father alive? I said, no, he died about 10 years ago. He said, what did he do? I said, he was a fighter pilot in the Marine Corps. And he just smiled again. And he said, that was your father.
He was trusting his intuition. He's getting a little message there for you. And,
yeah.
And you also went, you know, you chose the significance. Now, I want to talk about you went to Bermuda. You left the boat there. It was damaged. It needed to get repaired. And you came back to North Carolina. And
right.
You weren't really received with a whole lot of positive support. And I really appreciated the fact of how you looked at that and how you didn't let that get to you, because, you know, everyone's always going to have a comment. The fact that you did it is a phenomenal feat, and that, you know, in and of itself. But then you went back to Bermuda and chose, did you significantly choose the date of November 28th, 2011, or was that coincidental 10 years to the date of your father's death at sea?
No, I was thinking in my head, I flew back to Bermuda on November the 5th of 2011 because my daughter, and God love her soul, my daughter Kate and her fiancé at the time, Ross, they're now married, live in Washington, D.C., I hadn't spent much time with her because of my selfishness, basically, and trying to find myself, and selfishness in a good way, and that's a whole other subject. But I planned to go have Thanksgiving dinner with my daughter and Ross in D.C., and so I'm thinking I get to the boat on November the 5th, maybe in about a week. It'll be a six-day sail back to North Carolina. I can go have Thanksgiving with my daughter. Well, the weather dictates what one does
right.
at sea. Humans do not do what they want to do. The weather tells humans what to do, especially if you're sailing. Big ships, different story, somewhat. But I was basically stuck in Bermuda, because I was waiting for a weather window, a six-day window to sail back. Well, that time of year is not a good time of year to sail due west out of Bermuda. The only good direction that time of year is south to the Virgin Islands or someplace in the Caribbean. And I kept getting told that, even by Bermudians. So I'm sitting there on my boat for 3 weeks, frustrated, mad, angry that I couldn't get back to get to have a Thanksgiving meal with my daughter, who I hadn't seen in almost a year. And I called her up and I said, look, you know, I'm stuck here in Bermuda. Well, she was ticked off. She was not happy that, you know, she made all these plans, and she was right, you know, but I was stuck there. And so one day, about a week and a half before I took off to come back to Wilmington, it was getting towards Thanksgiving time, maybe about a week before, and this another old comedian, this guy must have been in his 90s, and I'm sitting on my boat waiting. This guy walks by, and he goes, you sail here in that? I said, yes, sir. And he goes, where's your crew? I said, I don't have a crew. It's just me. He said, where are you going? I said, North Carolina. He goes, you don't want to go to North Carolina right now. He said, the only time you can sail due west out of Bermuda is the first week in December. I said, I can't wait until the first week in December. I need to go see my daughter. And he goes, I'm telling you, do not leave here until the first week in December if that's the way you're going to go. And that's what happened. I left on November the 28th, 10 years almost to the day of my father's death at sea to go back to North Carolina.
So
because
unbelievable.
That the universe decided, not me.
All right. And we see this happening so much in our happenings, our perceptions, our awarenesses. When we start to go on a course of action, many, many times dates, situations, places, names of people will start to like circulate around us that have a resonance from either the past or some semblance to a happening that's associated with it. And I just found that date so timely for you because it didn't sound like you planned that date, but it was just so incredible how spirit works in divinity. And, you know, I want to also get in here before we get off, is that you're also putting together a documentary film called Changing Courses. And is that also in regard to this journey, correct?
It's directly related. That was the original intent. I originally intended to sail from Wilmington to Lisbon, Portugal, go to Bermuda, then the Azores, and then over on into Bermuda. I mean, into Lisbon. And there's a production company called Neo Art and Logic out in L.A. They're the executive producers of this. And there's a story behind that about how all of that happened, because I have a little bit of an acting experience and just knew somebody. I told her what I was doing, Sheila Brothers in Wilmington, North Carolina. And she said, "You got to film this, Frucci. You know, this is unique." And so we put cameras on board, and I did video logs instead of written logs, and I have a lot of footage from the entire adventure, going to Bermuda, being frustrated, coming back, finding peace. And now that I'm in California, I even filmed the drive out to California.
Wonderful.
But
how
the
interesting.
Yeah. It's still in process. It's not going to – I'm not finished. I am here in California for the next 4, 5, 10 years. I don't know, however long it takes, part of Changing Course. And then I'm going to get another boat, and I'm going to take off again. And my goal is to circumnavigate, and that will be part of the documentary as well.
Wonderful. Greg, I look forward to that documentary. I have a feeling it's going to be pretty awesome. And this has been a wonderful time talking to you. I've truly, truly appreciated it. I loved your book. And let's tell the audience how they can get a hold of you. Your book, again, The Path of 300, written by Greg Frucci. I truly recommend it. It's a well-written book. And just let our audience know how they can find you.
I have a website. The book has a website. It's pathof300.com, PATHOF300.com. The book is available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. There's a bookstore in Wilmington, North Carolina called Pomegranate Books. It's available there. It's getting a lot of good reviews on Amazon. And I even posted a link to it on your blog site. But the if you want to come into contact with me, if you go to pathof300.com, there's a contact page, and I welcome anybody's comments or emails, and if you hit me up, I'll respond.
Wonderful. Greg, it has truly been a pleasure having you on the show today. I think your book is a fabulous, exciting journey, and I know, especially, you know, as we move into, all of us are kind of at that age of reckoning, I like to call it, instead of the old middle age realm. But it's that age of reckoning. It comes in again after puberty. Once more, we start to figure out who we are and what's calling us and where our soul leads us. And to honor your call is a beautiful, beautiful testament to honoring soul and spirit within you. So I honor that, Greg, and I thank you so much for bringing your light and your wisdom and your experience to our show today. And I look forward to talking to you again in the near future.
Thank you, Lisa. I would be honored.
It was truly a wonderful book. And God bless you. Have a wonderful week and a happy Easter as well.
You too. Peace to you and peace to everyone.
Thank you, Greg. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, we're going to close up the show today, as we're talking about awareness and balance and how to integrate life so that we can look at it through a perspective of really, you know, embracing life and living life daily so that we don't just live life for the weekends and we don't just live life to have those little blips of happiness and joy. It's really, really to our benefit that we start to take more of a conscious relationship with our thoughts. And so, you know, there's always been so much hype about our visualization, our relaxation, our meditation. For decades, we've heard and listened to and have been taught by many teachers and experienced wise leaders how to control our thoughts, our breath, how to meditate, how to tap in, how to tune in, how to increase our awareness and our consciousness. And so I'd like to just take the last few minutes today to kind of like sum up what the show and the theme was for today, which is all about increasing our awareness, increasing our happiness and our joy through having more of a consciousness and balance that we can integrate. And the way of doing that is to look at life through a different perspective, not so much as tapping into a spiritual bypass aspect, as we discussed with Dr. Howard, but more of a practical approach and really taking control of the negs, is what I call it. And the negs are those unconscious negative thoughts, feelings, emotions that pop into our head. And we all have them. We're human. And it isn't something that we need to bash ourselves over, but it is something that we really need to start to be mindful of. And so we look at a lot of our relaxation techniques because the mind, when it's concentrated, visualization can be controlled. And there's many yogic exercises designed for concentrating the mind. Counting breaths is one of the first basic yogic concentration exercises. And we do this by counting one on our inhale and two on our exhale. Upon noticing during our inhale and our exhale an outside thought, we return our attention to the breathing. We don't bash the thought. We don't analyze the thought. We don't analyze and bash ourselves for having the thought. We simply return to the inhale and the exhale of our breath. Now, the more we learn how to control our thinking and our thoughts, the more we can be productive and eliminate the negative thoughts that pop in. It increases mindfulness, and it allows the thoughts to co-create and manifest and guide us into a new and different action. It allows us to look at decisions that we may never have considered before as if we stayed in a frenzied state of mind and thinking. And so by developing more of a consciousness and an awareness to controlling our thoughts and emotions, we're not this rudderless ship bouncing off of every single trigger that life throws at us. We're able to look at water, a water scene, a beautiful park, a tree, spring, flowers blooming, and see God in that nature and see the spirit that flows through us. And we can tap into that joy. We can walk into the earth barefoot and release through the inhale and the exhale as we do a mindful meditation for grounding and balancing. I do this every day that I work with clients because when you're taking on people's energy and you're in a helping profession, a service-oriented profession, there's energies bouncing all over you. And if you're not mindful and aware of these energies, it can affect your day. It can, you know, you could snap at the kids, you could, you know, get annoyed, make a lousy dinner, whatever it is, but it does affect you if you're not mindful of this. So what I do in between my breaks, between clients, is I walk barefoot in my grass. I walk, I talk to myself, God and I have a nice little chat, and I allow energy to restore myself. So take some of these tools into your day and allow yourself to really absorb the beauty that life offers us. We have God's gift at our disposal every single waking moment that we feel, sense, and internalize the beauty that nature beholds. If we can allow ourselves that connection to God through nature and allow ourselves the respect of balancing our priorities, ourselves, and our life, happiness is ours. So take those tools as we move into our Easter holiday. God bless you, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning into Unlimited Realities with Lisa Zimmer. I have loved giving you this show today. It's a great, great aspect to add to our daily awareness in really appreciation of the simplicity and the gratitude that God gives us every day. God bless you. Have a wonderful Easter. I look forward to talking to you next week. Bye-bye.